Everybody, this Shabbos, as we know, is Parsha Zachar. So we're going to talk tonight about some of the halachos that we need to be aware of in order to properly fulfill our mitzvah. The Mishnah in Megillah Daf Chavtes Amad Aleph tells us, Bishniya, the second of the Dalet Parshios that we read in this time of year, is Parsha Zachar. And says the Gemara, why is it that we read Parsha Zachar immediately before celebrating Purim? Says the Gemara, Lismoch Mechias Amalek, Lemechias Haman, because we want to read about Parsha Zachar, which is all about destroying Amalek, right before we are going to read about the destruction of a descendant of Amalek that happened on Purim with the destruction of the family of Haman. And this is what's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, quoting from the Rambam, quoting from the Gemara. This is what we do once a year right before Purim, that we read from Parshas Kisetze, the Parsha of Vayavo Amalek. Now the question is, why is it that we have an obligation to read Parsha Zachar once a year? So we know there are two different places in Chumash where the Torah speaks about the confrontation that we had with Amalek. One is in Parshas Beshalach, and the second one is in Parshas Kisetze. And there, in Parshas Kisetze, the Torah says, Lo tishkach, do not forget. Right? You have to remember, Zachar asher asah lecha Amalek, baderach betzeischa mimitzrayim. And the Torah ends off and says, Lo tishkach, don't forget. So how do you know that not forgetting has anything to do with reading it once a year? Maybe I should read it every day. Maybe I should have to talk about it every day. So the truth is that if you look in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, it seems that you really have an obligation to remember this all the time. The Rambam writes, and the Sefer Achinuch says the same, Shetzivanu lizkar masha asa lanu amalek, vishenom marze b'chol eis ve'eis. We have to say this and repeat this mitzvah all the time. We have to remind ourselves about Amalek at all times throughout the year. It is not only limited to one time of year. And the Rambam in Hilchos Malachim writes as well, Mitzvah Saseh Lizkar Tamid. We have to remind ourselves all the time, Maisav Hara and Va'arevaso. So if you're one of those people who stays till the end of davening every day, and not only do you finish davening, but you also say the things after davening in the small print, the Ani Mamins, so you've taken care of your obligation. But for most people who are running and who don't have time even to finish up davening itself, let alone what comes after the davening is over, so why is it that we only say this once a year? Where exactly does this come from? So it's interesting that really we draw a comparison here to Hilchos Avelos. Rabbi Kiva Eger writes in Hilchos Avelos that there are two different practices as to when a matseva should be resurrected. When should you put up a matseva for somebody who passed away? So we know in Eretz Yisrael they have a very different practice than we have here, and there they do it right away, some at the end of Shiva, some at the end of Shloshim. But here in America, generally, we wait until around the first yard site. And Rabbi Kiva Eger says, what's the significance of the first yard site, and how is that connected at all to the matseva? Why don't we put it up right away, or why don't we wait 5 years? What's the reason for waiting till the yard site? And Rabbi Kiva Eger explains two different reasons. And he says there are two different minhagim. Some have the minhag to put it up right before the yard site. Some have the minhag to put it up right after the yard site has passed. What's the difference? Why? Says Rabbi Kiva Eger, the whole point of the matseva is that we should all remember who this person was, and we should put some kind of description of what the person's life represented, that all those who forgot them should now have the opportunity to remind themselves of what this person's life was all about and what they represented in the lives that they lived. And therefore, says Rabbi Kiva Eger, the Gemara tells us that ames mishtakeach min alev achar yud beis chodesh. The Gemara says that we start forgetting about a mace after 12 months, which is why we have a process. We have Shiva, we have Shloshim, we have Yud Beis Chodesh, and the Rambam says somebody who is Misabel Yoser Midai, somebody who just can't get out of their minds after 12 months the fact that the person passed away, that says the Rambam is Hareza Tipshus. He says that makes no sense because this is the way of the world. People live and people unfortunately die, and at some point, even though it's difficult for us, at some point we need to part with our loved ones. And we need to accept that that's the way of the world. That's what happens. So the Rambam says we have a period in which we need to be in Shiva. Then we have a period in which we need to be in Shloshim. And then we have Yud Beis Chodesh. And then, after the Yud Beis Chodesh, we assume, not that we ever, Chalila, forget about the person, but we start to move on, and life begins to take its regular course. And therefore, he says, at the time when people are forgetting about what it is that that person represented, because a lapse of 12 months has passed, we want to make sure that everybody remembers. So he says, either we put the matseva up right before the 12 months are over so that we shouldn't forget, or we put it up right after the 12 months are over. Now that we've forgotten, we want to remind ourselves. But that's the reason why it's somewhere around the yard site, in order that we shouldn't go 12 months and totally forget about the Niftar. And therefore, we draw the same comparison here. If the Torah says, Lo Tishkach, the Torah says, you have to remind yourself of Zecher HaMalek, and you're not allowed to forget. Well, when do we forget things? Says the Gemara, you forget something once every 12 months, and therefore we assume, since we forget once every 12 months, therefore we assume that we have instituted to read Parsha Zachar once a year, which is going to fall out right before Purim, in order that we read it immediately before the story of Haman and his downfall. Now, the question that the Maharam Shik speaks about is, the Maharam Shik was the foremost Talmud of the Chasam Sofer in Germany, in Hungary, I should say. So, the Chasam Sofer is quoted by his Talmud, the Maharam Shik, that what do you do in a Shana Mu'uberes? In a Shana Mu'uberes, you have 12 months that have passed, because we have 13 months since the last time we read it. Oh, so we should have to, in a Shana Mu'uberes, we should have to do something unusual. And some suggested maybe in a Shana Mu'uberes, where you're going to go 12 months, which obviously inevitably means that you're going to forget, because 12 months pass and you forget something that you read 12 months ago, and therefore, they said perhaps in a Shana Mu'uberes, what should be done is, when you get to Parshas Kisetze in the middle of the summer, you should make sure to make an announcement. Everybody have in mind when we read this Aliyah that we are now going to be Yotze the Mitzvah of remembering the story of Amalek. Because by the time next Purim comes around, it's going to be too late. A year has passed already. That's what some suggested you have to do. Now that's something that most of our shuls do not do. We don't generally make an announcement, even though this year is a Shana Mu'uberes. We have not done that. So the Chasam Sofer wonders, how do you not do that? Don't we have this problem of Shikha? And the Torah says, Lo Tishkach, so how do you get around it? So the Chasam Sofer says, no. Perhaps, although it's true that every 12 months a person forgets something, but he says, perhaps there's reason to say that it goes seasonally. I'm not going to forget. It's Purim time. Last month was already Adar. I'm already thinking about Purim. I'm already thinking about Parsha Zachar. So I haven't forgotten. It's not that 12 months per se to the date is when a person forgets something. It's more something along the lines of, seasonally, I'm going to remember things that happened last season around this time of year, and therefore, writes the Chasam Sofer, maybe I should assume that there's no reason to be concerned in a year like this. However, the Chasam Sofer himself was Machmir, and the Chasam Sofer used to have in mind when they got to Parshas Kisetze that everybody should have in mind to be Yotze the Mitzvah then. Now, what's very surprising is, although we do this once a year, and although the Torah says, Lo Tishkach, and therefore doing it once a year will make sure that we don't forget, the Sefer HaChinuch writes, Lo Neida Zman Chiyuv Zeh, I don't know exactly how many times you're supposed to do this, Tetzarech Lizkar Pam B'Shana, O Shnayim, O Shalosh, Sefer HaChinuch says, maybe you're supposed to do this once a year, or maybe twice a year, or three times a year, I don't know exactly how we came to the number one. If it says, Lo Tishkach, maybe we should make sure that we do it more frequently than once a year. But that is the practice all over the world, like the Gemara says, that we read Parsha Zachar once a year, and we remind ourselves right before Purim about all that Amalek tried to do. And what's problematic is, the Sefer HaChinuch says the following, Ve'over al zeh, when would you say a person is in violation of the mitzvah of Lo Tishkach? What would you say? So when am I in violation of not putting on tefillin? What would you say? When a day has passed, and now it's the Shkia, I didn't put on tefillin. So you lost your chance. That's it. Tomorrow's not a makeup for today. It's too late. So once the Shkia comes, you've lost your opportunity, and now you're mevatel the mitzvah saseh. When would you say a person is mevatel the mitzvah of saying Kiddush on Shabbos? When the entire Shabbos passes, and I deliberately chose not to say Kiddush, so now that means once the Shabbos is over, I've lost my opportunity, and next Shabbos is not going to help. So the question is here, what would you say? When would a person be mevatel the mitzvah of Lo Tishkach? At what point in my life would I be mevatel it? What would you say? What? If I don't remember. Meaning, how do you quantify that? What does it mean? What? If a year passed, I should have said, if a year passed, and I decided this year, you know what, I'm not going to go hear Parsha Zachar, which is a bad example because it means I do remember about Amalek if I'm deciding not to. But if a year passes and whatever happens, I don't hear Parsha Zachar, I decide to go away for Shabbos and therefore I forget all about it. So in a case like that, I would have said that is when I'm mevatel the mitzvah lo saseh of lo tishkach, because after all, a whole year passed and I was mevatel the mitzvah because I did not remember in the past year. However, the Sefer HaChinuch here writes something very surprising, which needs an explanation. I don't know exactly what it is, but he says, if somebody does not do the zechira with his mouth and say it, or you hear it from the Baal Kori, it's the same thing. May olam. If I go through my entire life and I don't hear it even once, Masha Asa Amalek Li Yisrael. Then writes the Sefer Achinuch, Bitul Asei Zeh V'gam Avra Alav Haba Alzeh Shehu Lo Tishkach. Which is very surprising. Why would you say that all I need to do is hear it once in a lifetime? I would have said, since we know that the practice is you have to say Parsha Zachar once a year, every year, in order that I shouldn't forget, if you go by a year without hearing Parsha Zachar, you are already in violation of the mitzvahs lo tosei of lo tishkach. That's what I would have said. And yet the Sefer HaChinuch here writes something very surprising, that a person seems to be in violation only if they go through an entire lifetime and never do the mitzvah at all. That's a very surprising comment and very difficult to understand exactly where that comes from. Be it as it may, we all have the opportunity this Shabbos to be mekayim the mitzvah. And the question you need to ask yourself is, where are we going to choose to daven this Shabbos? Which is a very important question on two fronts. Number one, the question is, which Baal Kori are we going to listen to? So every minion has their own Baal Kori, and everybody has their own style of how they lay. But here, there's actually an insistence, many Achronim write, there's an insistence that you should try to hear Parsha Zachar in your Havara, in the way that you normally speak. So if you're a Svardi, and you always speak Hebrew in Havara Svaradit, the Achronim say, and the Chazonish, and many other Achronim write, that the proper way for you to be mekayim the mitzvah of Parsha Zachar is to make sure that you hear the Parsha being read in Havara Svaradit, because that is the minig of your family, and therefore he says, that is what a person should do. If your general practice is that you read Hebrew or you say, you speak Hebrew in a way which is not Havara Svaradit, but you do it in the way that many others speak Hebrew, so then we would say that you have to make sure to insist to hear Parsha Zachar from a Baal Korei who is going to read it in the way that your family normally speaks Hebrew. That's something to be aware of, and it's a major discussion in the Achronim, whether or not it's Ma'akev. So it's something to be mindful of, just to think about that. Yeah? Why not? Oh, so that's a good question. So that's what we're going to get into. Is there actually a mitzvah to read from the Sefer Torah once a year, or perhaps Lo Tishkach, as long as I remember, is that good enough? That's a good question. It's not so clear. Hopefully we'll get to it in the course of this year. But let us just get to something else first. There's a general discussion regarding the observance of all mitzvahs. And that is, we look at a Gemara Meseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chav Ches Amud Beis, where the Gemara says, do we assume that mitzvahs trichos kavana or not? Do we assume that whenever a person performs a mitzvah, they have to have specific intent to be in fulfillment of that mitzvah? Or do we assume that as long as I'm doing it, even if I'm not thinking anything, as long as I'm doing the act, whatever the act might be, that would be sufficient even if there is no kavana involved at all. Now make no mistake. When we talk about, let's say, kavana by davening, that's a very different understanding of kavana. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik writes in a sefer on the Rambam, when we say you have to have kavana in the first paragraph of Shemona Esrei, that has nothing to do with this concept of mitzvah strichas kavana. Mitzvah strichas kavana means, when I'm blowing shofar, do I have to have in mind that I'm doing this to be mekayim the mitzvah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai, which is why many communities have the practice to say l'shem yichud. But when we talk about kavana by davening, that means something entirely different. Kavana by davening means pirush hamilos. I have to understand the words that I'm saying. And there Rav Chaim says we have an insistence, and if a person does not have kavana by the first paragraph of davening of Shemona Esrei, you have not fulfilled your obligation of Shemona Esrei. We assume that that would not be good enough. Excuse me. So that is a very different understanding of what kavana actually means, and Rav Chaim points that out, that you should not make a mistake and assume that both of these things are referring to the same idea. They are actually referring to two different concepts. So, when we talk about the concept of mitzvos trichos kavana from the Gemara Meseches Rosh Hashanah, what exactly is the story there? So the Gemara tells us the following. Shalchu leila Avua de Shmuel. Avua de Shmuel said over the following halacha, kafo v'achal matzah. Somebody's sitting on the night of the Seder, and I have no interest in eating the matzah. I don't like it, I don't want it, I'm just not in the mood. And somebody else from the family comes over and stuffs it down my throat. Doesn't give me a choice. But I'm screaming and I'm yelling that I don't want this. I don't want to have a part in the matzah, I'm not interested. And yet somebody comes and shoves it down my throat. Well, that's obviously a person who does not have kavana to do the mitzvah. I don't want to do it. So the Gemara says, yatzah. As long as you ate the matzah, it's fine. Maybe unpleasant, you may have been very reluctant to do it, but the Gemara says, doesn't matter. Yatza, you've been in fulfillment of your mitzvah as long as the matzah got down your throat. Amar Rava. Rava said, we can now extend this to the din by Rosh Hashanah. Let's say a guy is screaming and yelling and he says, this year I'm so sick of the shofar, I don't want to hear it, and I'm not going to go to shul. and I don't want to have any part in the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar this year. However, he happens to also be a person who plays an instrument, and he decides to play his shofar today. Not because he wants to do the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar, but rather because he wants to practice for the upcoming concert that he has. So the Gemara says, Hatokea l'shir, if somebody is playing shofar, not because they want to do the mitzvah, but rather because they want to practice on the instrument that there happens to be a shofar, so the Gemara says, it would seem that you're in fulfillment of your obligation. Why should that be any different than kafu v'achol matzah? I didn't want to eat the matzah and someone shoved it down my throat, says the Gemara Yotze. I don't want to blow the shofar, and yet I'm doing it just to practice my music. I'm Yotze as well. Why? It seems to be an indication. Mitzvos ein srichos kavana. It seems clear from the Gemara that when you do a mitzvah, you do not have to have anything in mind. As long as the mitzvah gets done, it is going to be sufficient. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, shehakol nehiya bedvaro. So that's what the Gemara says there on Chav Ches Amud Beis. Then the Gemara goes further and says something that would seem to be a contradiction to this statement. The Gemara says that Rab Zeira told his shamash, he told the gabbai in the shul, Ichavein v'takali. When I come to shul on Rosh Hashanah, I want you to have in mind to blow the shofar on my behalf. Hey, ask the Gemara, what do you have to have in mind for? As long as you hear the shofar, it's good enough. We just said, Hatokei l'shir. If I'm blowing the shofar just for fun, or just to practice my musical instrument, that would be good enough, that would be sufficient. So how could it be that Rab Zeira came to shul and he says, I want the gabbai, I want the Baal Tokeh to have in mind to be motzi me. Why does he have to do that? As long as you hear the shofar, the mitzvah got done, and that is sufficient. So that is the question.
The ones that blow in, what's
the end? Yeah. So the Rishonim have a major problem trying to understand how do you put these two things together. Some Rishonim say there's a major distinction. One is where I'm the one who's blowing and I'm the one who's eating the matzah. So even if I don't have kavana, in the end of the day, I did it. But over here, I'm having someone else blow for me. So maybe there's a reason why we would need to have kavana there, because I need to have a relationship with that person who's doing the tkiyos. If I don't have a relationship with him by having kavana, then maybe there's some disconnect between the two of us, and even though I'm hearing it, it's not good enough. There would be a difference between me doing it and someone else doing it. That's what some Rishonim say. But other Rishonim say no. It seems that there's a major machlokas in the Gemara. Do we assume that mitzvah is trichas kavana or not? Do we assume that a person has to have specific intent every time they do a mitzvah to actually fulfill the mitzvah, or do we assume no? As long as the mitzvah is done, as long as you hear the shofar, you eat the matzah, as long as you're doing whatever has to be done, it doesn't matter if you had in mind or not, you will be mekayem the mitzvah regardless. That is the major, major question that the Gemara has there. But one question that the Gemara does not discuss is, where does the whole premise come from? Why would you think you have to have kavana when you do a mitzvah? Where does the Gemara ever speak about such a thing? What is the source in the Chumash that you have to have kavana when you do a mitzvah? So this is something that bothered many achronim. The Prima Gadim quotes a Levush. I don't know the Levushes on my own, but the Prima Gadim is where it should be. There in Shulchan Aruch and Simon Samach, when he talks about mitzvah Srichas kavana, on the bottom of the page, the Prima Gadim picks up on that and he says, hey, 1 minute here. He says, Ka'es, Lo matzasi, imen atorah, mitzvahs daraisa tzrichas kavana, omi derabanan. Says the Prima Gadim, I know that we're having a discussion here about mitzvahs tzrichas kavana or not, but I have no idea where this comes from. Yes, the Gemara mentions it, but is this a daraisa? Is it a derabanan? Will you be mekayim the mitzvah anyway if you don't have kavana and only midrabanan they said you have to? What's this all about? What's the source? And this is something that he said. I'm really not sure where to pin the mucker to this halacha from, and I'm not sure exactly what the source is. So the B'nai Yisaschar, although the B'nai Yisaschar is better known for his Chassidish Svarim, he also has a sefer on the sefer on mitzvahs called the Derech Pikudecha. And when I grew up, my father used to talk to us all the time about the Derech Pikudecha. He loves the Derech Pikudecha, even though most people never heard of it. But my father thought it was a very lumdish sefer. He liked it very much. He even gave me a copy of the Derech Pikudecha that I've never looked at, except for this. But here, the B'nai Yisaschar writes the following, and he says, Ladati, there is a major discussion. What is the source of this idea of mitzvah trichas kavana? He says, "Yesh kama psukim b'Torah morim al zeh." Says the B'nai Yisaschar, it's very simple. There are many psukim in Chumash that indicate that we need to have kavana when we do a mitzvah. Where do you find such an idea? For example, he says, "B'parshas Kisavo," it says in the Torah, "Hayom hazeh Hashem Elokecha mitzavcha la'asos." The Ribono Shel Olam has commanded us to do all of His mitzvos. V'shamarta v'asisa osam. And we should do our best to be diligent, to actually perform and fulfill all of those mitzvos. B'chal levavcha u'b'chal nafshecha. with all of your heart and with all of your soul. Says the Bnei Yisachar, what does it mean? V'chal levavcha v'chal nafshecha. Hine lev v'nefesh hu kavanas ha-machshava. What does the Torah mean? It says v'shamarta v'asisa. That means you should actually do it. Shake the lulav, blow the shofar, eat the matzah. We got it. What's b'chal levavcha v'chal nafshecha? I should chuckle while I do it? What do you want me to do? What's with my heart and soul? I'm doing it. Says the Bnei Yisachar, it's clear that the Torah demands something more than just the act. It means that you also have to do something with your heart and your mind. You have to be cognizant of the fact that you're fulfilling a mitzvah Hashem at the time that you do it. And if you don't have that in mind, you will not be mekayim the mitzvah. That, says the Bnei Yisachar, very simple, is the source for the idea of this concept of mitzvah shtrichas kavanah. In fact, there is a major discussion which I find fascinating. The Bnei Yisachar there in Hakdama Beis. Hakdama Aleph is where he says this idea of b'chal levavcha v'chal nafshecha. If you read the next paragraph, Hakdama Beis, he writes something fascinating. And he says, what would happen? Te da yedidi. De gamba lo sasei, eino yotze bezulas kavana. He says, I think it goes in the opposite direction as well. That if a person wants to get points for not violating a lo sasei, I have to have kavana that I'm not violating the lo sasei. So what's an example of that? What? So that's what he says. The same way a davar shein miskaven is not. What would you say?
I'm just saying that. So there you have you don't have an intent to, right? So therefore it's not allowed.
That's what he says. He says you don't violate the lav, but you don't get credit for keeping the lav. So for example, there's a whole group of people in the corner there, or whatever, in the ceiling, not in any part of this room. So a whole group in the ceiling that happens to be saying very juicy Lashon Hara. And I have a big interest to go over there and be involved in it. I happen to hate those people. I don't want to talk to them. I don't want to be anywhere near them. So the reason I don't go get involved in the conversation is not because I know there's a mitzvah not to be mekabel Lashon Hara, but rather because I despise that whole group of people and I don't want to be found anywhere near them. Would I get credit for not talking Lashon Hara or not? What do you say?
No.
Says the Bnei Yisachar, no. Because the reason you chose not to go there has nothing to do with the mitzvah. Even if there was no mitzvah about this, you also wouldn't have gone there. So take, for example, on Pesach. We have a mitzvah, Ba'yirah Ba'yimatzah. You're not allowed to have chametz in your possession. You're not allowed to eat chametz. So let's say I come into my house. There happens to be no chametz available. Why? Because it's Pesach. So do I get credit for Ba'yirah Ba'yimatzah when I didn't make a conscious effort not to have any chametz in my house over Pesach? I just happen to walk through the house and I don't find anything, and that's why I'm not eating chametz. It's just more convenient to eat all the food in the house that's Pesachdik, because otherwise I'm going to have to go to some store out of the neighborhood, find some crackers that they're carrying there and eat them. That's too hard for me to do. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get the Avera.
Right.
Correct.
I mean,
right, no, you're correct. So let's say I see something and I have a big urge to steal it. And I really want to take it. And then I see there's an explosive device on it. So I choose not to steal it, not because I care about someone else's property.
You didn't steal it. That's it.
Right. You're saying the examples I'm giving are not accurate. That might be correct. No. I think you're saying there are some lo sasseis. One minute. He says, I'll read you his lashon. Ein adam mekayim mitzvas lo sasei kitikuna ela bebo dvar aveilu yado. Like you said, I have an urge to steal something that's there. V'nimna v'lo asa, and I choose not to steal it because mipnei mitzvas hamakom. I choose not to steal it because the Ribbono Shel Olam said, don't steal. I will be Yoshev Ubatil. A guy sitting around and just, you know, doing nothing. Lo mikri mikayim mitzvah lo sasei. Exactly what you said. Right.
The way I understand the lo sasei, which is wrong, is that you are violating a mitzvah.
Right.
Not that you are keeping a mitzvah.
In
other words,
no, you have a good point.
I mean, you're getting points for doing, but you know, you lose points
for if you do it.
Right.
Right. Correct. It's okay. So something to think about. I think there is a lot of validity to what you're saying. But and I think the Bnei Yisachar is a tremendous chiddush, a very big chiddush.
Yeah. There's two aspects of the low sasa.
Yeah.
There's the low sasa if you do it.
Yeah.
And there's the low sasa if you hold yourself back, fighting against the other.
Yeah, but that's a big chiddush.
Yeah.
That's a tremendous chiddush. So he's just pointing out that that's not the simple way to understand the low sasa. Yeah.
More comfortable when you're saying that you steal something without the intention to steal, but you stole it.
Yeah.
So there, what happens there? There you don't.
I'm a misasik. I walk into a room on Shabbos and the lights go on. So I had no idea.
Well, but you turned on the lights. But oh, because you didn't have to, you were in the chavein, you're not getting
right.
You're not in that category. That's more comparable to this to the situation of an asay that you didn't have it in mind. Because both the mice,
The mice is happening, but I had no kavana for it. Okay, it's some. I don't want to get stuck on this. I just think it's something interesting to consider. How would this fit into the whole discussion of mitzvah Trichas Kavana? Why is this nogea to us? Because the Rishonim have a discussion about how we paskin. What is the bottom line of that Gemara? Do we assume mitzvah Trichas Kavana? Or do we assume mitzvah ain't Trichas Kavana? Which is a major, major difference. And the conclusion that the Shulchan Aruch comes to is, Yei Shomer mitzvah Trichas Kavana. Yei Shomer mitzvah ain't Trichas Kavana. The Shulchan Aruch has two opinions. So says the Magen Avraham, what do we do? Shulchan Aruch doesn't tell us what to do. He has two opinions. And now this is the major machlokas. So the Magen Avraham says the answer is we're going to come up with a compromise. And the Magen Avraham quotes in the Radvaz, the compromise position is the following. When it comes to a mitzvah, midaraisa, we assume that you have to have kavana. Because half of the Rishonim say mitzvah trichas kavana, you can't take the risk by a mitzvah daraisa. When it comes to a mitzvah midarabanan, okay, mitzvah saint trichas kavana, it's okay. You don't have to worry about it. That's the compromise position. Well, here, most assume that reading Parsha Zachar once a year is the fulfillment of a mitzvah daraisa. And therefore the Chasam Sofer writes in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch Siman Tav Reish Pei Hei that we should actually have kavana when we start to read Parsha Zachar every year, that we are being in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kriyas Parsha Zachar because the Ribbono Shel Olam told us to do this. So even though on a normal Shabbos when Kriyas HaTorah is only midirabbanan, we don't have to have specific intent to be Yotzei, over here when it comes to Parsha Zachar, this is when the Gabbai should make an announcement, everybody have in mind to be Yotzei because mitzvah Trichas Kavana. And this is something that is very important. Says Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, what if a person missed Parsha Zachar, they were in the hospital, an onus, whatever it was, and they weren't able to hear it? So he says, when it comes Parshas Kisetze in a few months from now, you should go over to the Balkore and you should tell him, I want you to have in mind to be Motzi me in the reading of Parsha Zachar, and I will have in mind to be Yotze with you, my mitzvah of Kriyas Parsha Zachar, because without that, he says, you don't have fulfillment of the mitzvah because Parsha Zachar is Midaraisa, and you need to make sure that you have Kavana in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Now, does Parsha Zachar require a minyan in order to be in fulfillment of the mitzvah or not? This is a very good question. So the Gemara Maseches Brachos Daf Mem Zayin tells us the story about Rebbe Lezer. We have a story about Rebbe Lezer there who had a servant. He was an Eved Kenani, and the Gemara says we have a Lo Sasei Midaraisa La'ola Mehem Ta'avodu. You're not just allowed to free a slave for no good reason. La'ola Mehem Ta'avodu. If you own a slave in Eved Kenani, he's in your possession forever. You're never allowed to let him go free. One fine day, Rebbe Lezer comes into shul, and there's only 9 people for the minyan. So he says, well, I have an Eved at home. He's not a full-fledged Jew yet, so we can't count him to the minyan. But if I let him go free, then he's considered to be a full-fledged Jew, and he has the chiyuv to fulfill all the mitzvahs. So great idea. He calls his Eved from the house. He says, please come to shul, and now I'm going to free you in order that you should be the 10th man for the minyan. Ask the Gemara, whoa, what do you mean? What right did he have to violate the Aveir of La'ola Mehem Ta'avodu? Very nice that he wanted a minion, but who said you're allowed to violate the Aveir of La'ola Mehem Ta'avodu in order to make your minion? What was the rationale for that? So the Gemara says, I say the Rabbi, maybe it was because the whole community needed it, and therefore that overrides my private Aveira that I'm going to violate of La'ola Mehem Ta'avodu. The problem is, the Gemara says, we don't say Chatei Kedei Sheyiska Chavercha. Very complicated sugya there, but the Rush writes, one second. It seems that the rationale is, Asei Derabim, because the community needed the 10th man, therefore it was worthwhile for me to violate an Aveira in order for them to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of having a minion. Says the Rush, I would imagine, he says, that this wasn't talking specifically when it was Parsha Zachar and they had to read Midaraisa with a minion. I assume that wasn't the circumstance that the Gemara is describing. Because if it was, then of course he would be allowed to. So he says, I'm assuming we're talking about a regular day. They all came to daven mincha, and they didn't have a tenth man, and yet they freed the eved anyway for a mitzvah midirabbanan. And says the Rosh, since it's a mitzvah derabim, even though it's a mitzvah midirabbanan, that will override the avera de'araisa of la'olam ha'am ta'avod. What do you see from the Rosh? Says the Trumas Hadesh, and what you can extract from that for our case is, the Rosh seems to be saying that you need a minyan to read Parsha Zachar. In order to fulfill the mitzvah properly, you need to actually have a minyan present, and if you don't have a minyan there, you are not in fulfillment of the mitzvah at all. And this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, Simen Tav Reish Pei Zayin. What? Right. So why would you need a minyan? That's a very good question. Yeah, where does this come from? Why would you need a minyan is a very good question. And in fact, the Sharat Zion, the Mishnah Berurah writes in the Sharat Zion that he doesn't really understand. He doesn't think that that's exactly what the Rosh meant. But this is something that the Shulchan Aruch seems to adopt based on the Trumas Hadeshan, who's quoting from the Rosh, that we assume that you need to have a minyan present when you read Parsha Zachar, although, as you mentioned very correctly, it seems to be a very surprising comment that the Rosh makes. Now, what is the halacha, asked the Magen Avraham, if a person ends up in the hospital, or for whatever reason, you're not able to make it to shul, and you cannot hear Parsha Zachar? Writes the Magen Avraham, very simple answer. A few days later, you're going to come to shul on Purim, and we're going to read from Parshas B'Shalach, Vayavo Amalek, Vayilachim Im Yisrael B'Rafidim. And therefore writes the Magen Avraham, very simple. When you come to shul on Purim, and you hear the Kriyas HaTorah, that will be the same as reading the story of Amalek in Parshas Kisetze. And the Mishnah Berurah says, really? How does that work? After all, we don't have the same storyline here in Parshas B'Shalach as we have in Parshas Kisetze. Over here in Parshas B'Shalach, the Torah never says, Zachar lo tishkach, it doesn't say that. Timcha zechar amalek, it doesn't say that here. That's only in Parshas Kisetze, and therefore he says, there's room to argue that you would not be in fulfillment of your mitzvah if you just came to shul on Purim, because that would not be a substitute for the obligation that we have to read Parshas Zachar from Parshas Kisetze. Now, a question that we need to ask ourselves is, what is the nature of a woman's obligation in reading Parshas Zachar? And as we know, many, many women try their hardest to come to shul, especially this Shabbos on Parshas Zachar, to hear the laning. Is this something that they really have an obligation to fulfill, or perhaps not? So what would you say? Some say reading Parshas Zachar is mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. And therefore we should say, since we only do it once a year, the woman should be exempt. The woman should be exempt from this mitzvah. So is interesting. It's a question whether or not you can apply it here, because Tosis writes in other places that maybe we only say by mitzvahs derabbanan, not by mitzvahs deraisa. It's not so clear where we say afin haibos anes and we don't. But the Toras Chesed who writes that maybe it's considered mitzvah seish hazman grama. This is not a time bound mitzvah. What if I miss it Parsha Zachar? So I'll get another time in the year. I'll find a way to hear Parsha Zachar some other time of the year. It's not that you have to only hear it this time of the year. Once a year, at some point during the duration of the year, you have to read about what happened with Amalek. And therefore, to argue that there's a mitzvah seish hazman grama is a very questionable thing to say. But the Torah's Chesed says, I'll read you his lasha mikal makom. He says, La ra'inu v'lo shamanu. I never heard and I've never seen shenashim boz l'shma kriyas parsha zachar. Never heard of this. Says the Torah's Chesed, he was the Lablina Rav. He was quite a great Talmud Chacham. And the Torah's Chesed writes, he was the Gadol Adar in his generation. He says, I never heard of this. Women come to hear Parsha Zachar. Why? Mitzvah Seish Hazman Grama, no reason for them to come. So leaving aside Mitzvah Seish Hazman Grama, there's a much more fundamental reason why women might not have an obligation to come hear Parsha Zachar. The Sefer Achinuch writes that he thinks that women are not obligated to hear Parsha Zachar. They don't have the obligation of Lotishkach, because after all, he says, Isha ein darka lichbosh. A woman is not really supposed to be a member of the army. What's with the Israeli soldiers today that they allow women to enlist in the army? Okay, nobody asked the Shiloh. But in the halachic army, we would say, women are not really supposed to be drafted into the army. And therefore, because women don't have an obligation to fight, therefore we assume that connected to that is also, they don't have an obligation to remember about the fight. After all, what does the Pasuk say? We have an obligation, Timcha Zecher Amalek, Mitachas HaShamayim, Lo Tishkach. Don't forget that you have an obligation to destroy them. Well, if I don't have an obligation to destroy them, I also don't have an obligation to remember about it. It's not my problem. What about a veil under their Oh, that's a great question. What about a male under 20? Excellent question. I have no idea. But that is what the Sefer HaChinuch writes, that we would say that a woman does not have an obligation simply because she is not drafted into the army, and therefore we assume there's no reason for her to remember. Both of those mitzvahs, he assumes, are contingent one on the other. And the Minchas Chinuch says, where do you get that from? There's one chiyuv of destroying Amalek. There's a separate mitzvah of always reminding our children and ourselves that there was a nation by the name of Amalek who tried to obliterate us, who tried to annihilate us, they wanted to destroy us. That is a separate obligation. What does that have to do with the fight itself? It's two separate mitzvahs. And the Minchas Chinuch writes, I don't understand what one has to do with the other. And secondly, the Minchas Chinuch argues, he says, even though it's true a woman is not drafted technically into the army, but the Gemara says when we go to a Mechemes Mitzvah, the women have to do their fair share. So if it means they have to go and clean the guns, then that's what they have to do. If it means they have to go and prepare the meals, or they have to, whatever, do some other things just as part of the war effort, they also need to be involved in our Mechemes Mitzvah. And the Gemara even says, afilu kala michupasa, a woman who just got married has to go in the middle of Shever Brachus out to the war effort because this is something that's important for the Jewish people. So ask the Minchas Chinuch, what do you mean? A woman is not totally exempt from the war effort. She has to be involved. Whenever the time will come when we will be involved in the Melchemes Amalek, a woman has to be involved just like a man is involved. And therefore he says he doesn't understand where this comes from. So, this is a major machlokes, exactly how to understand this. And the truth is, the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos, when he talks about this mitzvah, he says, Ne'orer ha'nefashos b'ma'amarim, why is it that we have an obligation to say and to remind ourselves of Parshas HaMalek, it is in order, lihilachem bo, in order that we should be aroused to go and fight against HaMalek. So the Rambam seems to adopt the same position that the Sefer HaChinuch said, that these two mitzvahs are contingent on one another, and therefore he or she who is not obligated in the mitzvah of destroying is also not going to be obligated in the mitzvah of remembering to destroy, which is a chiddush, but that is what the Sefer HaChinuch and the Rambam seem to say. And based on that, it is said in the name of the Chazon Ish, and I've said on many occasions, my father always says, Kula from the Chazon Ish, you take it and run. So the Chazon Ish, quoted by his nephew, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, writes in the Sefer Talmud Dekra, that the Chazon Ish told him on many occasions that women do not have an obligation to hear Parsha Zachar, and there's no reason for them to go out of their way. If it's easier for them to go to shul, of course, why not? Just like they volunteer to do many other things. But if it's going to be so difficult for them to come to shul and hear Parsha Zachar, they have no obligation to do so, and they say, Rav Moshe Feinstein used to say the same thing, that there really is no absolute obligation for a woman to go hear Parsha Zachar, and therefore they said that she does not have to go so far out of their way. And this really touches on another issue. If you assume that a woman really is not absolutely obligated in the reading of Parsha Zachar, then we get to another case, which is, the Netziv has a tshuva, what right do you have to take a Sefer Torah out when you're laning only for women who don't even have an obligation? We don't have anything against women, but we do have a lot of respect for Sefer Torah. And if the Sefer Torah is not going to be used for a real obligation, what right do you have to take a Sefer Torah out of the Aron Kodesh, open it up, read from the Sefer Torah when nobody here really has an obligation to do so? So in some communities they make sure, look, they have a Kriya again later on in the day, they make sure there are a few men who are left aside who didn't hear earlier that they come again to the Kriya later, and then we are taking it out for the men who do have an obligation once the men are listening, so then they listen for the women as well. That's what they do. What? Without a bracha, okay. You're saying the man is really supposed to hear it with a bracha. It's true, but under the circumstances, that's what some people do. But this is a very big issue that some achronim talk about. What is the rationale? If a woman is going to volunteer to go to the mitzvah, so what rationale is there to take a Sefer Torah out specifically only for the woman to go and fulfill her mitzvah if really she does not have an obligation to do the mitzvah in the first place? That is a very good question, but one final issue that we're going to discuss, and then we'll close for Maariv, is what about once I've decided that I'm going to go to shul, and my wife also is going to go to shul, and the women of the family also want to be machmer? It's great. It's wonderful. Everyone wants to do the mitzvah properly. So which shul are we going to go to? We said before, one factor we need to keep in mind is which havara is the Baal Kori going to read in? Havara Sfaradit or not is something that's a question that makes a major difference by Parsha Zachar. But the second question we need to ask ourselves is, we have a mitzvah, we have an idea that the Gemara talks about of Berov Am Hadras Melech. And this is relevant not only to the mitzvah here, but it comes up when we talk about Mikra Megillah as well. So where are you going to decide to hear the Megillah this year is a very good question. The Gemara says, Mevatlin Talmud Torah Lishmoa Mikra Megillah. What does that mean? So the Gemara is describing a case where you have a yeshiva bacher who's sitting in yeshiva, and he knows how to lay in the Megillah on his own. So he can just take out a cloth and lay in the Megillah on Purim night and get right back to his learning. Or, He can go a few blocks away to the big shul and hear the Megillah being read together with the hundreds of people of the community. Which one should he choose? Says the Gemara, although we know the Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, we put a tremendous premium on learning Torah, we still tell the person who's learning, Mevatlin Talmud Torah, Lishma Mikra Megillah. The appropriate thing for you to do is to stop your learning, go to the shul, and even though it's going to take you twice as long, three times as long, and it's going to be Mevatl some of your time from learning, that is what you should do. Because Berov Am Hadras Melech. So much so that the Gemara says, when you have Kohanim Ba'avodasam, Ulevim Biduchanam, when you have a Beis HaMikdash, and now it comes Purim Day, and we have to go and hear the Megillah, so we have two options. We can take out a Megillah in the Beis HaMikdash and have a private reading for all the Kohanim and Levim that are there. Or, says the Gemara, the second option is they can go down the block to the other shul, which is going to take them twice as long because they have to walk there and walk back, and things always take longer in a shul because till you get everybody quiet and everybody ready. So we can tell them they have to go down the block to the bigger shul and hear it together with everybody else. Says the Gemara, yes. Mevatlin kohanim me'avodasam uluvim miduchanam. We hang up a sign in the Beis HaMikdash that says, sorry, closed for maintenance purposes. We're all going to hear the Megillah down the block, and we'll be back in an hour. Sorry. Why? Because Barov Am Hadras Melech. And the same goes over here. When it comes to Parsha Zachar, one should try, when you have the opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah, you should try to do it with the most possible people that you can have, with the maximum number of people that you can get. That is the preferred option. And this is the way we're always supposed to do things. The Mishnah Berurah writes, even if one shul has 100 people and the other shul has 500 people, so we still would say you should go to the one with 500 people. However, says the Mishnah Berurah, and this is an important caveat to mention, if in one shul there's going to be a lot of noise, and therefore you're going to be distracted, or in one shul, says the Mishnah Berurah, you happen not to like the people, and therefore, if you go daven in that shul, you're going to be so distracted the whole time thinking about all the people that you don't like, and therefore you're not going to be able to daven properly, or lane properly, or pay attention, then says the Mishnah Berurah, obviously, that is a factor you need to contend with. It's something you need to think about. But let's say everything is equal. Either I love both communities equally, or I hate both communities equally. I don't like people in either shul. Or I like the Balkori here, and I like the Balkori there, or I don't like either one. So now I have to make a decision when it's an even playing field. And I have to decide whether I'm going to go to this shul to do my mitzvah, or I'm going to go to the other shul. In such a case, says the Gemara, Berov Am Hadras Melech is a factor that we need to think about. Because it enhances the mitzvah. It's almost like a hider mitzvah. When we fulfill our obligation of Parsha Zechar, or our obligation of reading the Megillah, we should look to do it in the best possible way that we can. And says the Gemara, the best possible way to do that is Berov Am Hadras Melech, and therefore we should choose carefully, we should choose wisely, and do it in the best possible hider mitzvah way that a person can fulfill that mitzvah. So